If you are looking for even more help and guidance on your breakup, I have a few different options for you to take your healing to the next level. I have 4 different online courses depending on what stage of the breakup that you're in, from beginning all the way into moving on after heartbreak. Or you can bundle all of my courses together and use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. I also have my 30-day no contact challenge to help hold you accountable in going no contact with your ex. And we have our free Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with other people going through breakups all over the world. To learn more about any of these resources, head to the show notes where you can learn more about my courses, take the quiz to figure out which course is best for you, or join the Facebook group. And don't forget to use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. Welcome to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast with your host, Breakup Bestie, aka me, Kendra. Breakups are hard, but you don't have to do it alone. Each week, I will be taking you through a different topic as it relates to breaking up, healing from heartbreak, growing in your single life, dating, and getting back into happier and healthier relationships. The goal of this show is to provide support, hope, tips, and to remind you that above all, this too shall pass. Welcome back to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. Very excited for today's guest on the show. We have Sabrina Zohar. She is the host of the Sabrina Zohar podcast. You may also know her from Instagram. I did her show fairly recently and we had such a blast talking. She is incredible. I'm a big Sabrina fan. We talk about a lot of things on this episode, as we normally do with guests, but I would say the overall theme of today's episode is not taking your breakup so personally, which I know that's so much easier said than done, but we talk about why rejection hurts so bad, what's actually happening in the brain that makes it hurt so bad. We talk a lot about the narratives that we tell ourselves and why rejection or relationship choices or breakups, how they play into that narrative and the story that we're telling ourselves. We talk about no contact and why she thinks it's so important. And she shares a lot of great stories that have a lot of great lessons. So I loved this episode. I definitely hope to have Sabrina back on the show, but I hope all of you listen to this episode as well as head over to her podcast and listen to some episodes as well. Welcome, Sabrina, to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. Very happy to have you on as a BTS. This was a rescheduled episode, so I'm very, very happy that we're here.
Me too. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. I can't wait. Your episode comes out on my show, and I'm so excited that we get to help more people because that is really ultimately our goal, and I loved our conversation, so I'm stoked for another.
Yay. Well, I was telling you before we started recording, like narrowing down like a topic or a gist for today. First of all, I respect you so much. And like, I just respect your thoughts and opinions on dating and relationships so much. And you have so much good stuff. So it was like, okay, where do we take this? And one thing that you do so well that I know my audience needs is this idea of like not taking breakups as personally as they very much feel. But to backtrack, I want to hear a little bit of your story of what led you to talk about dating and relationships and like, where did this expertise come from?
Oh, yeah. So much personal experience. It's almost ad nauseum, but yeah, it was really like my journey was like, I moved to New York when I was 19. I went to school for acting and I was like, this is not it. Went to school for fashion. And while I was in school, like I always took classes in psychology just because I enjoyed it. I never thought this was something I wanted to pursue. And fast forward, I was like 27, 28. So it was like 2017. I married my father. Like I was with a man that was almost an exact replica, just not as volatile outwardly, but incredibly narcissistic, really triggered every core wound that I had and made me feel truly like I was the problem of the planet. And like, if I wasn't here, maybe life would be better for everybody else. Like it was that detrimental to my mental health. And that's when I started therapy. I was like, I got to do something. I started inner child work, ketamine treatments, just learning about myself, started my clothing company software, thinking, okay, that's what's going to do it. Brought me to moving to LA in 2021 with my dog. And I was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed thinking like, oh, it's going to be so much better and dating's going to be great. And it was like, it was terrible. It was a whole nother level of a beast I didn't know, right? Being this fast-talking, cursing girl from the East Coast coming to California was very jarring for a lot of people, and I get it. So that was an acclimation for me. And in 2022, I was supposed to be on Shark Tank. And I was prepping and I was like, I was on set. That was it. It was my call time. Sabrina, you are up next, getting hair and makeup done, outfit steamed. Your set is ready. The sharks are there. Like, are you ready? And it was like, yes, I've been prepping this for 6 months. There was over like 45 interviews. Like, this was it for me. And I go up, and this was like July or August. It was July of 2022. And I go up and I'm in the room and something felt off. And I was doing my like meditation and I'm getting my energy into this. And I'm like, we're going to get the money, Mark Cuban. I'm coming for you. But something in my gut was like, no, this just doesn't feel right. And sure enough, 30 minutes later, they come in to say, I'm so sorry, we have to send you home. We don't have the time. And as I'm walking out, they gave my spot to somebody else who was out of town. And because I was local, and I spiraled and I really got into such a dark place. And prior to that, I had been listening to all the clickbait, like the stuff that you and I see every day of like, you know, don't text this, don't sleep with him, don't do this, don't do this, you're not high value. And so I was very confused. I felt very lost. And this guy I went on one date with, he was just there for me. Like, we never saw each other again. And he just called me that night just to see how it went. And he talked me off a ledge and it really shifted everything, where I started to realize, and I had started to change the way I dated and really was like learning what boundaries were and saying no and but taking up space, truth be told, because that was not my childhood. You would have been reprimanded very heavily if you even said no to something. And it really just made me realize, like, wow, I think we've been going about the dating thing a little bit wonky. I started creating content. I was like, you know what? I'll turn to TikTok. I had zero followers. I had nothing that I have now. And I said, I'll just share my story. There's got to be other people that are suffering. Long story medium, I then start dating this guy, very avoidant. I started learning more about myself. My dog gets sick. He passes away within 2 weeks, not even. And I hit my rock bottom. That was really the moment where I was like, I am done being so unhappy and waking up every day listening to other people telling me how to live my life. And so I started to just turn creating content, and I met my partner, and really it just started to mushroom from there of creating a community of people that were like me, that had such high anxiety. We didn't know what to do with it. The tools out there were not helping. The advice and the information out there was not helping me feel any better or do any better. And here we are today, just going through and still trying to find myself and still understanding what anxiety looks like and still learning how to manage it. Because I think, I'm curious your thoughts on this, but I feel like we are sold this false bill of goods that if you just go to therapy, it's all just going to be fine and you're never going to feel this again and everything's going to be great and hunky-dory and you move on with your life. But really, what did therapy do? It just taught me how to live with this, and it taught me how to change my mindset, rewire my brain, but ultimately hold compassion and space for the fact that, like, I have anxiety in my body and that makes me very human.
1,000%. I didn't know this part about your story, but the thing that hit me when you were talking, I think what you do so well is, and the thing that like so many people get wrong, especially with dating advice, in my opinion, is it's so compartmentalized of like, okay, it takes everything. Like you said, it's therapy. It's learning about anxiety. Like, it's learning about your attachment style. It's figuring out what style works for you. It's like learning how to own yourself. It's not just like the one thing. And I think so many people want the one thing that's gonna make them find their partner. And like, it's just not that simple, but not that simple doesn't quote unquote sell well online. Yeah. So I think the idea of like figuring out how to put your like program basically together, that's what, and I think you do it really well, and you do it by, you know, sharing what has worked for you, even like in the moment, which I think is so powerful.
Thank you. For me, I want to create a conversation similar to you. Like, that's why I love your work, because you're not hiding from, hey, we need to talk about this. Like, this is important stuff that we need to bring out to the air, because it's the same thing, right? We go through a breakup. We see all of this content out there of like, they're the bad person, right? Or, oh my God, you're the one who ruined everything and everything's your fault. Or it's black and white, very good versus bad, yay versus nay. And what we're not seeing is that shade of gray. We're not seeing nuance and understanding that, like, we're humans and humans are complex and fickle as fuck. That's the nicest way I could say it. We are very complex creatures. So for something to fit on a bumper sticker or be 140 characters or less, like a slogan, it doesn't take into account the human experience. And I think so many of us are used to our own lived experience without understanding that everybody else has a different one. And so I'm excited today to be able to talk about something. I think, like, to your point, taking things personal. Oh my God, that was the cross I bear. I took everything personal. Everything was my fault. I'm too much. I'm too this. I'm always the problem. Like I literally said, I genuinely believed if I just didn't exist, maybe other people's lives would be better. And it really stemmed from like my own insecurities, my childhood, my upbringing. We could go into all of that, but I just want anyone to know, like, you're not alone if you think that, and it's not, you're not beholden to it. Your brain is actually quite neuroplastic. We can change it, but it's you who has to do that work, not the person on the internet telling you to call this person and hope that they'll take you back.
Yeah. And what the, like, there's so many things that are like, I don't know. I just look at like the design of life of like this kind of sick jokes that happen. But like when you have such bad insecurities about yourself, because I went through this, you attract people who literally confirm that. And it's like, okay, perfect. Like, yeah, me too. And so it's like, okay, great. Now I have to hear this from the outside. And we think, okay, this means it's right. When in reality, no, it's just you're attracting someone that confirms that. So the first question I want to ask, and this is probably a big one, it might take a few parts, is why does rejection hurt us so bad? Like, what does it hit that hurts so, so bad?
Totally. And I think it's a really fair question. So when we think about what is it, like by definition, being rejected, right? If we actually look at it, it means being ridiculed or judged for who you are. And for a lot of us, rejection feels so personal because of the narratives and the stories that we've created. So I'll just give an example, right? To somebody, it's like a trigger. What is a trigger? A trigger is a cue to your nervous system that you're in danger. So in the same vein of rejection, like if I shut the door loudly, nobody in the room might react, but maybe if your father used to slam the door, you might jolt and say, "Ooh." Well, that's because it hit your core belief. It hit a trigger for you. It hit something in. So for a lot of people, right, they could look at rejection as redirection. Okay, hey, you're making space for me to find the right person. Thank you so much for not wasting my time. That's a mindset shift, right? Because I believe in my gut and in my core, I am worthy and deserving of this. My worth is not contingent on you choosing me and how I view myself. My mama always says, you got to love yourself more than the need to be loved by other people. So then when we see the flip side of people that rejection feels so personal is because we have to look at the narrative associated with it. So this person maybe, and it could be, we usually see, it's a statement that's a little loaded, but I'm going to say it, typically only obsess over people that don't make us feel safe, because the person that was really loving and kind and compassionate and warm and thoughtful, it's either, it's a mutual feeling of, hey, this isn't working, right? Or it's saying, I don't like this. This is boring, right? We have a whole slew of things. I'm not ready for a relationship. Versus when we have somebody that is either triggering our nervous system consistently, making us not feel safe, right? I don't feel like I can express myself. I don't feel like I can say something. I'm scared I'm going to push them away. So then we start to act differently. We start to come off. And that's kind of your point of what we made earlier of how we're attracting these people. It's, yes, it's a vibe, of course, but it's also what we're willing to allow. And I think for a lot of people, if your narrative is, for me, I'm too much, I'm too needy, there's something wrong with me, no one's ever going to love me, love has to be earned, it's conditional, right? Insert every core belief you could possibly imagine. That's our bullshit blueprint, and that's programming. Then when we start to strip this away, so if somebody comes and says, hey, I'm not interested in pursuing you, what happens is it's not actually about them. Because when we start to unwind it, right, and I'm sure you can relate when you talk to people, if you say like, what hurts you, right? It's usually there's something wrong with me. They didn't like me. I'm not good enough. Very rarely is it, well, they were an incredible person. Here's X, Y, Z of all the reasons that they showed me this. Because typically speaking, if this person was all these amazing things, you'd probably be in a relationship with them. And so oftentimes it's, depending on if it's limerence, right? If we're obsessed, if we're hyper-focusing on somebody else, if we're putting all of our attention onto them, what does that do? It distracts us from doing the inner work of ourselves. More so when we really have that rejection wound that gets really, really hit, oftentimes it's just a trigger of a core belief from a younger age. My father used to reject me. So if another person that mimics him feels familiar or hits that same wound, typically speaking, I'm in my amygdala part of the brain. I'm in that other, that limbic system that's on autopilot that is just reacting versus taking a second to say, wait a minute, what's happening in my body? Okay, I've had 3 dates with this person. Did I project onto them a future? Was I hoping that their potential? Was I hoping they were going to save me? Was I thinking that them choosing me means I'm valid or there's something, you know, maybe I'm not, there's something not wrong with me? So I often always look at what's the narrative that's associated with it and what is the story you're telling about yourself, about the situation and the quote unquote rejection, because I hear it often. They rejected me. And it's like, after one date, right? One or two dates, how could they have known that much about you to reject who you are when it more so could be maybe they don't want a relationship and you do, and they're just not interested or have the bandwidth. Maybe they like brunettes and you're blonde. It could be something minute. It doesn't mean that you need to change who you are. That just means that this person isn't for you.
Yeah, that's so true. And I've heard you talk about this too, but sometimes people will be talking to me, and right after the breakup happens, they are immediately trying to diagnose the why, or they're just trying to dig too far into it when they're literally just in this like survival mode. And you talk about this, like your prefrontal cortex, like all of your good judgment is, it's off. It literally turns off. So I truly believe you cannot like immediately process a breakup because there's no logic in it at all. Do you agree?
100%. Let's talk about what's happening in the brain, right? So what you're describing beautifully is like that is intellectualizing. And what, so when we actually look at it cognitively, the stress. So after a breakup, you're going through a withdrawal, first of all. So your dopamine and all of your neurotransmitters, when we're stressed, cortisol spikes. Every other neurotransmitter naturally gets depleted because your body needs everything it can to handle the stress and the cortisol. Then when we think, so that's just the neuroscience lens, right? If we actually look at like what's physiologically happening in our body, then what happens is a lot of people, like you said, it's trying, when we ask why questions, like I love Britt Frank, one of my best friends, and she always says, shift why questions to I don't like. So typically speaking, when we go, why didn't they want me? Why don't they like me? What's happening is your brain is in overdrive. It's trying to intellectualize what's happening because it can't handle the pain. So if we can figure why didn't they like me, if I get the answer, then this will make it go away. But the reality is you need your, of course you need your logic, but you're not in your logical brain because like you said, your prefrontal cortex is shut off. When you're in your amygdala, when you're that stress, when you're going through a withdrawal, you're naturally not going to go into the space of your brain that will be able to be logical because you're in such an emotional state. Usually what helps, name it to tame it, is one of my favorite like therapeutic terms. But it really just means if I can stop and say, I'm hurting right now, what I've done is I've turned my prefrontal cortex on because I named the emotion and now my logical brain starts to kick on. And sometimes I think more often than not, like I used to be that girl after a breakup, especially like the ones, you know, that were very clearly not healthy, right? It's like the either they love bombed or they came on really strong and then they start to fizzle, or they were so perfect for 2 months and then now all of a sudden they're a different person and they blindsided me and all of those stories that I've told myself, because what that does is allows me to stay in the victim mode. Well, why didn't they want me? What's wrong with me? Oh no. And it's not about shame or blame, but staying in that space isn't actually going to help you move on. You know what actually will? Sitting and saying, I'm really sad right now. This hurts. And I'm allowed to feel that. When we validate ourselves, because what we end up doing as well is you start to gaslight yourself. You're like, 100%. I shouldn't be, right? I shouldn't be sad. I shouldn't be upset. I'm so crazy. We start to make this narrative and then you're getting further and further away from what's actually happening. And when we really start to peel that back, like I've actually been doing some like inner child work. And the other day, like, you know, you saw the video of mine where I was losing my shit and I was really sad and I was anxious and I was crying. And I really thought it was everybody. No, it's because a troll was mean to me. I saw this negative review. What it was when I started to really sit with the pain was I was being mad. I was being angry to myself. I was putting myself down. And my inner child just wanted me to be nice to her. And that came in a vision. She was like, maybe you could just speak to me with love. And I realized like I'm my own worst enemy. It's not anybody else. It's the weight that I give these thoughts, because I could tell you right now, Kendra, fuck off. And you could be like, okay, see ya. Or you could take it personal and cry and everything. What changed? The narrative you told yourself, not what I said to you or how I responded to you.
Yeah. And like, cause I used to do this too. And my therapist used to get on me. She'd be like, okay, literally stop just talking yourself out of the problem and, you know, like let's pause. But I think what happens is, you know, let's say someone's coming out of a situationship and they're obviously upset, which is like people don't think situationships qualify as breakups. I highly disagree, but they're so upset. And then they're telling themselves, it was only like a 2 month situationship. They didn't even commit to me. Like then you start feeling, I'm so overly sensitive, or I'm so illogical, or I'm too much. And then you're sad and you feel like you're not taking away the sad. All you're doing is like creating a bigger mountain to heal through later on.
And like you said, because you're adding that core belief, right? A situationship, like I'm with you. It is a breakup, right? It's an ending. It's a, especially when you have the texting every day, that creates a dopamine reward system that, and like for anybody that's listening, dopamine is the neurotransmitter that is released in anticipation of. Serotonin is the neurotransmitter that's typically released when you get the thing. So that's why dopamine feels so good. Think about it, right? We all have goals. How many times you've reached the goal and you're like, oh, that's it? It's anticlimactic. You're like, oh, oh, I did it. Because the anticipation of is when the dopamine gets released. It keeps you going. It's the reward system. So that happens, right? A situationship. Let's talk about that. If it's a situationship, by definition, that means no one's talking about their feelings or what it is they want. Otherwise, it would be casual because you'd have clearly defined boundaries, or you'd be dating, right? When we hear the situationship term, it's because there's not clearly defined boundaries about what you guys are doing or what it is that we're willing to accept. And so off the bat, what is that going to do? It's going to keep us in a challenge. I want to earn this. I have to be a good girl or boy or they. I have to be a good person. Don't say anything. Don't be too needy. You don't want to push them away. But oh my God, but if I say this, they're going to think I'm too much. I know that game and I have played it so many times. The, oh my God, you just want to like come over and sleep with me, but like you don't want to commit to me. That's fine. If I just keep being this girl, you're eventually going to realize how amazing I am and you're going to fall in love with me. They never do. Just a spoiler alert. It doesn't work. So, and that's self-abandonment. So when we look at that, and then, like you said, compounding, so the whole time you're self-abandoning, so already you're treating yourself like shit, you're talking negatively, don't do this, don't say that, your needs are not getting met. Then this person says, hey, sorry, I don't want a relationship, or I met someone else, or whatever, I don't want to do this anymore, they fizzle, they flake, whatever. Then on top of it, we started to now, like you said, you had the baseline of just being sad. Then we add on the core beliefs. Oh, but see, I knew I wasn't good enough, it's because I'm too much. If I had just not said that one thing, they wouldn't have left. And all I hear is my number one question is like, how old do you sound when you say things like that? Does that sound like the able-bodied adult that's sitting here who has a job and a career, kids, a family, friends? Or does that sound like a child who is just upset that their parents or their caregiver is being mean to them or dismissed them or didn't prioritize them? But typically speaking, when we see situationships, and like you said, when those end, we take it very personally because we've been self-abandoning the whole time in order to keep it, that now we think, oh, if I had just been different. I personally would rather be quote unquote rejected for who I actually am than being a version of myself that I'm not, because then I don't actually feel like you got to know me and gave me a fair shot.
Yeah. And not to mention the work that then comes back. I remember my therapist said, like, the more you ignore your North Star, like you're going to forget where it is. You're going to completely lose it. And then I think, I mean, for sure, me have gone through breakups where not only am I dealing with the breakup, I am dealing with completely like, who am I? I don't even know what I like anymore because I spent so long self-abandoning that it's a breakup plus like an entire reinvention versus let me be myself. Let me get rejected. Okay, I lost the person. I still know who I am. Like, it's just so much more work on the other side of a breakup when you are doing that self-abandonment.
One thing that I just see all the time, and I'm also curious if you see this, I don't think enough people, and it's okay, I don't think we were taught this, but I don't think enough of us grieve. Like really grieve, not just the ending of the relationship, right? Who was I in that relationship? The version of myself that believed this. What is the future I thought we were going to have? What did this say about me? I need to grieve. And I realized that the other night I was having just all of these emotions were coming through me. And I started to journal because my partner, he was like, I think you should go and write some stuff down. And I was like, you're right. It's going to drive me insane if I keep it up here. And as I started to journal, I was grieving. It started to transition from these people don't like me into, but what about my dad? But my dad is right. Oh my God, my dad is right. And it started to go and I had to grieve. You know what, Sabrina, you didn't get the caregivers that you deserved. You did not get that. You didn't have the childhood that you deserved because if you did, you wouldn't be so beholden to other people's opinion of you. But here's the thing. I get to rewrite that story now. I am an adult who gets to make choices. I might not like them, right? Adulting is weird, but I do get to make a choice. And right now in this moment, the choice I have is, like, I remember right before I met my partner, I was dating this guy. We went on 3 dates. It was like at the same time, you know, like I met them literally within a week of apart. Ryan is very, like you've met him. He's very just like, hi, very like stoic and cold at first. And you're like, oh, I can't really read him. And then once you get to know him, he's such a different personality. He's so lovely and so sweet. He's an ogre. He's Shrek. He doesn't want anyone to know that. And so I was dating this other guy and this other guy was gregarious and big personality and so good. He was attractive and charming and smart and tall and tattooed. He was every single thing that I just thought that I was going to get. And after 3 dates, he texts me saying, I'm having suicidal ideations. I can't be in a relationship. I'm sorry. I can't do this. And I remember my mom just like grabbed my hand and she's like, I know you're sad, but Sabrina, I need you to grieve this and accept that you cannot save him. And I wanted to. I wanted to step into that space of like, but I can be here. I can heal you. We could do this together. And she was right. It was way above my pay grade. And then I started dating Ryan more seriously. I was like, okay, well, yeah, universe, like, here we go. I'd only had one date with Ryan at the time. So I was like, okay, I'll keep dating this person and kind of get to know him a little bit more. And throughout it all, of course, the other guy would come into my mind. I'm a human, right? And instead of shaming myself and blaming myself and being like, God, you're going to ruin everything, I allowed it. He would come into my mind and I would say, okay, so I'm thinking about him. And that was it. I would allow and be like, okay, I'm not going to, I don't need to attach a story. Yeah, this sucks. He was really a lovely person. And even though romantically it didn't work, I wish we could have had a friendship. That was grieving. I was grieving the girl that really believed that that was her future. And that's okay because I'm human and I'm allowed to. And so I think of any of us like, and I could have taken it personally and said, but what, am I not good enough? You don't think that you could do this. But what I had to look at and say was, how could this be about me when you barely know me? What it could be about was that the version of myself showing up, you're not ready to receive. That doesn't mean it's me. That just means that's your own shit. And I think being able to differentiate between those two and allowing yourself to grieve and set and cry and process. And to anybody of your friends that say, you need to get over it, let it go. Those are friends you need to tell to fuck off, because no one, I've had that. You know, I had somebody leave me a comment on the podcast saying, love the show, but you know what? You really need to get over the name change. None of us care anymore. You're the only one making a big deal out of this, but just this whole thing. And you better believe I said something on the show and I was like, go fuck yourself, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you for listening. But who are you to tell me when I need to move on from something in my own house? Allow yourself to process and feel. And anybody that's forcing you to move on faster or say, don't do this, or come on, just get over it. Those are people that maybe are uncomfortable with your emotions, and you having feelings makes them feel really scared because they don't know how to support that.
Over the past year, I've really made an effort to get my finances in a place where I'm not just budgeting, but I'm also looking into my financial future. And recently, I've learned a few things that I think you would find so interesting. Did you know that 66% of men are investing in the stock market compared to just 48% of women? And here's another one that probably won't surprise you. Multiple studies have shown that women are better investors than men. Why? Because men are overconfident and women actually do the research. The good news is that Acorns makes it easy for everyone to start investing. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that matches you and your money goals. You also don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you have is spare change. I love that Acorns automates and takes the guesswork out of what is usually a very intimidating process. Sign up now and join the over 13 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $22 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/heartbreak or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risks. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/heartbreak. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes in addition to your breakup overwhelm? If you're a woman, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now. In our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. And these hormone disruptors are on top of the natural hormone changes we go through. And even though it is a natural process, it doesn't mean it doesn't wreak havoc on us. The good news is you don't have to suffer through it anymore. Thanks to Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, a formula made with only herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal changes in women of all ages. I love that Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. And here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. That's why Hormone Harmony is perfect for women of all ages who are struggling with life-disrupting symptoms such as PMS symptoms, menopause symptoms, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, and occasional bloating and gas. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code HEARTBREAK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEARTBREAK for 15% off today.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
Yeah. And be mindful if the person telling you that is you. You know, I think that happens exactly. A lot of like, just get over it. Like the thing is, when we can accept that in the moment and say like, I'm so sad that this didn't work, it will move, like everything will move at a faster pace because you're actually like accepting it and letting it move through you instead of being like, oh, no, we can't feel sad. Or like, it's so interesting because I ask people a lot of the time, I'm like, what do you think it means to be like over a breakup? Or like, what do you think it means to like be over an ex? And so often, like, in my opinion, people are very far off the mark because they will say like, oh, I don't think about them anymore. Or like, I never get sad about them anymore. And I tell people like, I have exes that I haven't seen in like 10 years that I still think about. And it's not like I still have dreams about sometimes, or like I'm married. I saw that an ex is married and had a kid. And I was like, oh, that stings a little bit. And it's not like, you know, I hate my husband. I wish I would have ended up with this person. No, it's not that at all. It's just the brain works like that. So, like, why did my ex look at my social media? They're probably curious. Like, I'm curious. I look at exes sometimes. It's nothing like that. It's just, I don't know. So I do think like people kind of, they think they're way further behind in moving through a breakup because they just have very unrealistic expectations of what it means to heal from someone.
Couldn't agree more. I think you said that really beautifully, especially like I had the same thing. I saw a guy that I, many moons ago, he was the one guy that like throughout the entirety of my dating history always kept coming back. It was like an 8-year, you tell him to fuck off. And then 6 months later you match again. It's like that cycle. And when I moved to LA, that was it. I was done with him. We never spoke again. And same thing. I looked, he like popped up. It was one, some thousands, you know, it came up on the For You page or whatever, that he was married with a baby and had moved and all this. And it stung, same thing. I was like, oh, and I even told my partner, I was told Ryan, and he was like, oh yeah, I could see how that could like feel really shitty that this person treated you so poorly. And then not even 3 months after standing me up for the date, you met her, they were engaged within 6 months, that type of thing. And you're like, yeah. And all I did was say, you know what? He's not for me. Because what my mama always used to say was, and I'm curious your thoughts too, if you have an emotion, I love them or I hate them, then you probably haven't moved on. But indifference, like I can look and go, yeah, that might sting a little, but I'm not sitting here creating a narrative. Like I found out that my ex that I said was like my dad, the man that I was with, somebody told me recently, they were like, you know, so-and-so, he's engaged again. And my first response was I laughed and I said, I feel bad for her, right? Literally, she showed me a photo. I didn't recognize him. That's what I mean by indifference. It doesn't mean that I don't still think about him or share stories of like, you know, something will happen with me and Ryan and I'll be like, oh my goodness, I remember this. You're human. It's part of your past. It's part of your history. And I think to your point, trying to get rid of it, oh yeah, good luck. It's the same thing as we're trying to avoid our childhood. I just don't want to think about it. When at the end of the day, it's not about avoiding. It's not about shame or blame. What it is, it's about acceptance and acknowledgement of this really hurt. Like you said, this stung. I'm allowed to let this sting. I have emotions. But to the issue I have is a lot of the content we see is very like, oh, well, I'm going to judge you if you do that, or you should just be over it, or no contact. Yeah, it's all very important, but that doesn't mean that while you go through it, you're not still allowed to have emotions.
Yeah. I was actually watching a video you did about no contact. And I always try to communicate this too. It's just because it's quote unquote, like, in my opinion, like the better way to move forward through a breakup does not mean that it is not so difficult. So difficult. And just because, you know, you're not with that person and also like, it's so hard for me not to contact them, it must mean that I should be with them. And it's like, no, that's not it at all. And going back to what you were talking about with the dopamine, I think it makes a lot of sense of like, that's why I think no contact works so well, is because it drops that anxiety of, am I going to hear from them or not? And like, now I never knew that like, am I going to hear from them or not? That's dopamine, because it's like this excitement, the anticipation of like, oh, am I going to hear from them? All this stuff. But if you just take that off the table, yeah, you're going to crash out so hard from like all the depletion, but you're going to be able to recover a little quicker. Do you find that to be true?
100%. Britt Frank and I actually have a breakup course. And the first thing she says is it takes 3 weeks for your brain to recalibrate. So that, because it's a withdrawal, it's the same thing with drugs. And we think, it's not a substance. It's the same thing. It hits the same parts of the brain. It activates the same parts of the brain. Because to your point, this person is a drug. Every day I'm getting my hit. Okay, it's dripping me, slow dripping me that dopamine feed. Then when I don't have them, what happened again? The breakup caused the cortisol to spike. And then on top of it, you're not getting those neurotransmitters being replenished by getting that text from them. And you're constantly waiting. Are they going to choose me? Are they going to miss me? Are they going to come back? Do you think they'll care? You know, they always come back. No, they don't. They don't always come back. Sometimes these people do move on and find someone else that works better for them. That, again, doesn't mean that there's something wrong with me. It's the narrative that I associate to it to mean something, right? Like, I am sure you, like I just said, the guy that I had that, just because he moved on with somebody 3-4 months later and found another girl, they got married, and that was his person. She could handle his bullshit. She probably doesn't speak back up to him. She lets him shine and be the leader. That works for him. That doesn't mean that it has to mean that there's something wrong with me, right? And that's holding two conflicting thoughts. It's a DBT practice. It's my favorite. When we start to hold, I can miss someone and I can also know they're not for me, right? I can do no contact and know, like people say the same thing to you that they say to you, it's really hard, easier said than done. It's like, baby, choose your hard. Waking up for some people is really tough. Getting out of bed every day for some people is a challenge. And for others, it's nothing. So we have to look and say, well, me just surviving in the world is hard. So if I could do that, I could do this. Let me talk to you about this. You knew this person for fucking 3 weeks, right? You text every single day. You had, however old you are, that many years without this person. I think you can handle it. And it's okay that you don't believe that you can. That means, okay, that's some inner work that we have to do. But no contact is imperative, because every time they come back, it's like, think of them as heroin. If you're trying to withdraw and move on, yeah, heroin addiction is the worst, right? From what I've been told. I've never experienced it, but Britt did, Britt Frank. And she was like, dude, the withdrawals are gnarly. You're shaking, you're crying, you're a shell of a human. And then you rebuild yourself to be the version of yourself that you're really proud of stepping into.
Yeah, in my opinion, so much relates to, as someone that has gone, by the way, I'm having Britt on the podcast. I'm very excited. And I think I interview her in a couple months. So stay tuned for that.
Yes.
But I mean, I agree so much with the connection between addiction and breakups, because it is. It's like, I mean, when I talk to Dr. Amen, he's like, we call it like cocaine brain. Like when you're falling in love, your brain looks the exact same as someone who is high on cocaine. Like it's the exact same thing. And going back to what we were just talking about, of this idea of indifference, because as someone like who has existed without alcohol or anything for 12 years now, like I don't feel any way towards alcohol. It's like, I don't miss it. I don't want it, but I also like am not repulsed by it. Like I can walk through, like I can be with people who are drinking. I can pour someone a glass of wine. It's the indifference, because anything else is me giving it energy. Like me trying to actively like avoid my ex, which yes, you need to do in the beginning, but like me trying to like force them out of my mind or anything like that, that's giving it energy. It's the same thing as like pining for them. Whereas for me to say, oh, I'm thinking about them, that's interesting, that makes me sad, and then move on, like that's forming that level of indifference.
What you resist persists, right? If the more we avoid it, and that's why oftentimes, like when these breakups happen, like I just did a video the other day where I was like, no, they're not the fucking love of your life. This is not the one that got away. This is somebody that was fucking with your nervous system and causing you not to feel safe and feeling dysregulated. If I hear one more time they were my twin flame, I'm like, have we not watched the documentary? Have we not seen both of them at this point to see that this is a farce? It's just allowing you to hold on to somebody longer than they need to be held on to. I will tell you this, in my history of history, every single person I have pined after to this day, I'm like, oof, that worked out well. I'll share you a story. Very quick. When I lived in New York back in the day, it was like 2014, I think. And I matched with this guy and he took me out to this like a very fancy dinner in New York, Bond Street Sushi. For anybody that knows, it's like, it is très expensive. And I remember he was like, oh, I work for Facebook. I'm in town. I live in San Francisco, but he's like, I'm here every month. That bullshit excuse that people give when you're like, sure, this is actually your first time coming, but okay. And can we please go out? Cause I told him like, I don't want to do a casual long distance thing. He's like, no, I'm here all the time. I'm getting an office here. I have to have my team here. I'll be here every month. I can have a relationship. Okay, fine. We go out to dinner and it's like the time we were there for 6 hours, you know, and that's why when people were like, we had a 15-hour date, I'm like, it doesn't matter. That person either wanted to get laid or was just having a good time. Like, it doesn't matter how long you're with somebody. That doesn't mean they want a relationship with you. They're just having a good time.
Yeah.
And to the point where even the bartender was like, how long have you guys been together? Like a few years. And we're like, it's our first date. Ha ha. Oh, how cute, right? A little cute meet. We like made out. We didn't hook up in that regard. We just like had, we like fooled around, you know, with some hands. And then I was like, no, I don't want to do this. then he asked me out on a second date a few days later. And I was like, okay. He was like, can I see you again? I'm here for a week. Great. The day of the date comes, I get a video from him in the car saying, my office just got broken into because he had a startup himself. And he's like, I have to head back. I'm in the car right now going to the airport. I'm so sorry. I'll be back in 2 weeks. Can I take you out? And I was, of course, bummed. And I was like, okay. He never came back to New York. Like, that was it. Let's be real. And it was the type of thing where it was like the texting got less and less. And then he was like, oh, you know, I don't know. And then I tried to, like, we would FaceTime and I would say, like, can I come visit you? There was always a hesitancy. And I kept thinking, he's the one for me. Oh my God. This went on. It's that same kind of story I told you before, where it's like they always show up. And even during COVID, we were reconnecting. We reconnected a couple of years ago before I met Ryan. I was like, okay. Then fast forward, and I'm just like, oh my God, but he was the one. I missed out. There's something wrong with me. That narrative. Then I'm at an appointment, and the girl who's doing the appointment, I'm not going to say what because people know who I talk about when I say this, so I don't want to out her. It's an appointment, and we're going, and I'm telling her, we're talking about dating, and I'm telling her this story. And all of a sudden, she just stops, and she says, what's his name? And I said, blah, blah, blah. And she just, like, she literally turned white, and she starts to cry, and she's like, that was the ex I was just talking about. That was the narcissist that ruined me. And I was like, what? And she's bawling. She shows me photos. He, after me, met her and was tagging. And then he had another girlfriend. And she was like, he made me a shell of a human. She was like, I was a wreck. And it hit me in that moment. And I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. Thank God this didn't work out, right? Like, I needed another narcissist in my life. But that's what I mean by, like, we put the importance of these people of, like, they're this and they're this and there's something wrong with me and what's wrong. No, baby, there was nothing wrong with me. He was a lying sack of shit who had multiple women that he was playing. He was not being honest. He was not holding accountability. That's why he didn't want me to come visit. And at the end of the day, that rejection was redirection. It saved me and spared me years of therapy. Because when I found that out, I had never felt more vindicated in my life. And I was like, oh my God, yay. To this day, every time a guy has rejected me, they usually come back being like, hey, by the way, it wasn't you. I wasn't ready. And I'm like, oh, I know. I don't need to take this personally.
Yeah.
Except in the times where I'm sure you'll understand what I mean when, like, your anxiety does push someone. Like, there are times where we have to look and say, hey, you text that person 180 times while they were at work. That's why they're like, hey, no, thank you. That's different, but it's still not you. It's your anxiety that created an issue.
Totally. And I would still argue, I don't know. I know not everyone would, I'm curious what your thoughts are on this, but, like, I still believe that if I look at relationships that I quote unquote ruined, like before I got sober with my drinking or like whatever that looks like, I still know they weren't my person.
Yep.
And I know that's like harder to believe when it is, because I get that question a lot. What if it was me? Like, what if it really was me? Like, I can look at the facts, like I made a mistake or let my anxiety, and I'll still say, like, great learning experience. So glad we learned it on someone that's not our person.
100%. I think what's for you won't pass you. And it's like, if that, now to your point, I have definitely personally, I've ruined relationships from forming. That doesn't mean necessarily we would have been together. Because of my anxiety, I stopped it from going further, right? Like I have done it where a guy didn't text me back for an hour and I wrote to him, like telling him off. And he was like, whoa, I was excited about our date, but like, I'm good. I don't want to see you. And you're like, oh, that was my anxiety. I didn't let, but at the end of the day, it's like, well, then that's right. That wasn't my person. Maybe it could have been all these, but it's not, right? It didn't work out. And that's the acceptance piece, because the reality is there's a lot of people that could be your person, right? Like there's 8.8 billion people. And if we actually look at the markers, there was a study, I need to like look into it further, but I think it's like, there's like 30% of compatibility markers need to be matched in order for you to actually have a successful relationship with somebody. So we think it's, oh, we need all of these things. You actually don't. You need a lot less. But what that shows us is means there's other people. Okay, so this one didn't work. Like you said, you learned, you move on. There's somebody else for you. Mm-hmm. And what changed it for me was I used to have the mindset of the scarcity. This is it. There's nobody else. I have to make this work. Then I just one day was like, I'm tired of living like this. And it's what I use even in my business now with my mental state. At any given second, I could meet my person. I could get that email. I could get that contract. I could get the person that reaches out. It happened yesterday. Ryan came up. Holy God, did you see the email? And I was like, I was having a bad day and now I wasn't anymore. At any second, your phone could light up and you get a match. You could go to a coffee shop and someone just so happens to start a conversation. when we live in that space of I'm open and ready, whatever swarm you won't pass me. Oh my God, just wait for your dating experiences to change, because what you're telling people is I don't need you, but I want you. And it's a beautiful place to not be attached and say, I need you, right? If you let me go, if you reject me, it means everything about me. And instead it's, I want you in my life, but I'm not going to self-sacrifice to keep you there.
Yeah, I think that's so powerful. And yes, I think that is one of the biggest things that keeps people stuck in relationships that are not serving them, or just continue to pursue someone who clearly like is, does not want to be pursued, is this idea of they were my person. I think what's interesting is like, I don't know, like I tend to tell people, especially when someone's coming out of a good relationship, maybe like for me, I think of all my horrendous relationships. And then the one that hurt the most was like a very quote unquote, like healthy relationship. And I thought like, okay, like that was my one and now I'm done. But I always tell people like, if you're coming out of a good relationship, like that's great. Like that tells me like your next relationship's like gonna be much better. It's not like, I don't know, like if you lose one, that doesn't mean that's it.
Well, that usually comes from a child, right? When we think about like, I only get one set of caregivers. You can't leave me. I have to have you. Yeah. What am I going to do? And mm-hmm. I mean, even to this day, I love my partner. We are, the ring has been bought. Like we're moving forward, but we still have conversations where like the other day we were like, is this it? Like, did we reach an impasse? No, we didn't. We figured our way out. But we've both said it to each other. If this ended today, I never will regret a day of the relationship that we had, because that just showed me that we can have that. I hope it doesn't, right? But yeah. I will never. I learned that when my dog passed away, because when I had Clemmy, I genuinely thought I will not be okay if I don't have him. I'm not going to be able to go on without him. And then when he died, I lost myself because I didn't know who I was. Who am I without you in my life? And that's when I realized I have to be okay to lose things. You're going to lose pretty much everything in your life at some point, because you're going to die too, right? All of these things have an expiration date. The more we try to hold on, and it's not to be, you know, it's not to be dark and sad, but it's more about just being honest that it's okay to let people go, especially the ones that let go of you, because it just makes space for people that don't want to let go of you, that do see who you are. It just shows us, well, if you have one, that means you'll have another.
Yeah, I agree 100%. There was one thing that I just, it's kind of going off topic a little bit, but this whole idea of someone, because I think a lot of people go through breakups where the person said, like, I don't want a commitment, I don't want to get married, or I don't want this. Then they watch the next person they're with, they watch them get married, or they watch them commit. And I think that's like the thing people take personally the most. And I know you have like a really good, I don't know, theory on that, or like thoughts on that. And I kind of wanted to end on that. That was actually my first question I wrote down. And then we just never got to my questions that I wrote down, which I love, my favorite kind of interviews. But same. Yeah, could you talk on that a little?
Of course. I love that when I'm like, I didn't even have to look at this. We just had so much fun.
Literally didn't look
absolutely.
At it.
Absolutely. And now here's the thing. Does it hurt? Yeah, of course it hurts, right? Like that's, you're a human. But then what I look at is twofold. One, the next person didn't get anything that you didn't, right? So if you're like, well, they were super avoided and they never opened up. Okay. You're looking at a highlight reel that on Instagram, like I'll give you an example. One of my friends had that and she was dating this guy. He was a raging piece of shit. And he didn't commit to her. Next thing she knows, not even a month later, he's got a new girlfriend and he's parading her around the gym and he's doing all these things. And she did the same thing. What's wrong with me? And I kept telling her, you don't know the real story. You don't know what they're experiencing. You don't know what boundary she doesn't have. You don't know what, maybe she's a very calm, relaxed personality and you are a big personality. And that didn't work for them because they just don't like having to compete with somebody. Sure enough, we see a post 3 months later of the girl saying, or her friend said she was institutionalized because this guy was so bad to her. He broke her so bad she had to go to a mental institute because he was so dismissive, gaslighting, all of that. And I remember my friend calling me and she's like, girl, oh my God. And I was like, you see what I mean? We don't know. Same with the guy that I said that he got married and has a kid now. Here's the thing. They match. They're better for each other. Great. Go find your person. I'll find mine. It's what do we attach the story to? Sure. They might've found someone else. Okay. That stinks because I did want a relationship, but here's the reality. Just because you want a relationship doesn't mean that they want one with you. Doesn't mean you're compatible. Yes. And we have to stop looking. What's compatibility? Morals, ethos, ethics align. Do we want to live the same life? Do I want kids? Do they want kids? Do I want marriage? Do they? Do we want to live in America? Do we want to live in Timbuktu? Do I believe in this political or that? Do I support this or do I support that? That doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with me because you might date me. look at the guy that I dated before Ryan, right? He might say, oh my God, she moved on immediately to somebody else and she didn't even give me a shot. And it's like, no, man, we weren't for each other at the time. I wasn't going to wait for you. I wasn't going to put my life on hold. And I met somebody that was more in alignment with where I was at the time of my life. And so just because you want a relationship also doesn't necessarily mean that you are ready for one with this person, and that's okay. Maybe we can just look at, we were not in alignment of what we wanted in our future, even though you might think that you were. Let them go with love, because what's for you won't pass you. And the more you hold on to somebody that's already fucking moved on, the more you're putting them on a pedestal and saying there's something wrong with me, which makes them better than me. And that just reaffirms core beliefs. And then good luck trying to date anybody else after that.
Yeah. And like I tell people too, especially when it comes to like, because that was my thing, like going after people that were very emotionally unavailable and not being able to commit. And then I look at them be in committed relationships. And finally, I'm looking back and I'm like, I don't want to be known as like the girl that needs the least. Like, that's not a title I want to hold. So it's like, yeah, they could probably commit to someone who needed less within a relationship. Like, that's not a contest that I want to win, is like requiring the least. And that gave me a lot of peace.
My ex's ex, two of them reached out to me, the one that was the biggie, yeah. Both of them to say, by the way, you were right. And I was like, what? I never even spoken to you. I remember, I'll never forget the DM. She said, hey, we have something mutual in common. I already knew. All I wrote to her back and said, what did he do this time? I already knew, because I had the same thing. When I saw him with a new girl, I was like, oh my God, you moved on so quickly. I am the loser. What was it about? It wasn't about him. It was my narrative. I'm the loser. Mm-hmm. I can't find anybody else. I haven't found anyone new. So it's more about what I believe about myself than it is about the relationship that we had and the fact that this person has moved on. Because if I really looked at it objectively, that's why he had four exes in the interim of me being single, was because this person was avoidant and he was just cycling through people and staying with them for 6, 7, 8 months and then on to the next, that if I made it about me, it would actually be doing a disservice to his, because I'm not holding him accountable for his behavior and I want to internalize everything, right? Yeah. And I want to take it as it's all my fault. It's not mine to own.
Yeah. And just to touch on this, but I also think we do that for a sense of control. It's scary that we can't control other people. So it's like, oh, I can get a sense of control by saying this is my fault because maybe I can change, but that's not yours to hold. That's theirs. That is not yours. I could talk to you for so long. I adore you. Like, this is so fun to talk to you. So this has been such a treat. Very, very happy that we did this. And can you share a little bit about where people can find more of you?
Of course. Thank you for having me. By the time this comes out, yours is out, but I'm so excited to have you on the show. So the Sabrina Zohar Show is the podcast if you guys want to hear more of my fast talk cursing and Kendra, and SabrinaZohar.com or the Sabrina Zohar Show on Instagram. Pretty much my name on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. You'll find me somehow and you can come and join the community of all of us just trying to fucking navigate this wonky world every day together.
Yes. I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Sabrina. This was really, really fun. So I appreciate it so much.
Thanks, Kendra.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you loved it, I hope you'll leave a review and share with your friends. If you're not already following me on Instagram, head to @yourbreakupbestie, where I'm sharing new content almost every day. To join our Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with thousands of people from all over the world going through breakups, head to the link in the show notes. And don't forget to check out my online courses for more in-depth help through your healing journey. I always end these episodes the same way, reminding you to be nice to yourself, stay connected with loved ones, and the biggest reminder is that this too shall pass. I promise.